Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
No one laughs at God in a hospital. No one laughs at God in a war. No one's laughing at God when they're starving or freezing or so very poor. No one laughs at God when a doctor calls after some routine tests. No one's laughing at God when it's gotten real late and their kid's not back from that party yet. No one laughs at God when their airplane starts to uncontrollably shake. No one's laughing at God when they see the one they love.
God, 33 times and counting. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, the Almighty as a musical muse. And a little bit later, former indie Christian rocker David Bazan talks about his now very complicated relationship with his faith and will play live for us. But first, this new single by singer-songwriter Regina Spektor mentions God 33 times. She joins a crowded field of musicians who've made songs inspired by the Almighty, in many cases taking over entire albums, as with former Beatle George Harrison, or perhaps most famously with Bob Dylan, in his case, a couple of albums. In a moment, we'll hear about a whole movement in hip-hop called God-hop. But first, we turn to an old friend of the show who says she likes thinking and talking about God. Ann Powers is chief pop music critic for the LA Times. Hi, Ann.
I hope you're having a blessed day. That's all I can say.
You know, Ann, it strikes me that the relationship over the years between religion and music has been a kind of a fraught one, you know?
Yeah.
Is it a good mix or
an
uneasy one?
It's an inevitable mix, I think. You know, I mean, basically, spirituality is one of the great themes of art, and American popular music is founded on one of its founding elements is sacred music, specifically gospel music. Church music has always inspired people. So given that, you know, people like Ray Charles and James Brown and Aretha Franklin took gospel into the secular realm, and it's been happening even longer than that, of course, it totally makes sense that those who followed in their wake would go back to the sacred realm. You know, plus, it's just a human impulse, right? Sort of like falling in love, you fall into God, and musicians do it like everybody else.
So, but when musicians do it, when they kind of fall into it, as you put it, it can often mean a kind of a major change in what we've come to expect from those musicians. And, Bob Dylan being a great example when that happened to him in the 70s.
What? Or Prince, for example,
Prince,
you know, when
yeah.
he became a Jehovah's Witness and suddenly wouldn't perform any of his old sexier songs. I think that was very troubling to people.
So why is that? Is it kind of all wrapped up in how, our sense of an artist's identity and not wanting that to change?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. For one thing, popular artists, celebrities are kind of like secular gods in our culture. So, you know, more like Roman or Greek gods than like the Christian, Jewish, or Muslim god. We hold them up, we admire them, we idealize them. So when they themselves become absorbed in a search for a higher power, it can be confusing, especially if, as with Dylan, it seems to contradict their origins. You know, when he got interested in Christianity, well, I mean, he's Bobby Zimmerman. He's Jewish. So I think a lot of people were confused about that. At the same time, I think it made for some great music from him that since that time, people recognize as really, as really deep.
Well, when you mentioned confusion, I mean, you know, confusion, doubt, conflict, these also seem to be real, you know, grist for the songwriter's mill. I mean, this Regina Spektor song, you know,
right. She
was on Soundcheck back in June, and she actually told us a little bit about, you know, what was behind this song.
A lot of it has to do with the idea of, you know, the spirit and faith and spirituality and how that fits or doesn't fit with religion and concepts of, you know, extreme religion and organized religion. And I'm also really fascinated by atheism and existentialism. I'm interested in it all. I don't really have a, you know, none of it is like didactic or I'm like, you know, do this or I think this, you know, all of it is just like I'm always thinking about it.
That's Regina Spektor. Now, you know, and she's from a Russian Jewish family,
right.
Emigrated to the Bronx.
Right.
But we have this kind of There's a sense that if you start mentioning God in a song, mm-hmm. it's Christian rock, you know?
Well, especially now that Christian rock has become a major element in pop music, and there's been tons of what I like to call stealth Christians in pop, you know, who come from the Christian rock scene or the worship music scene and then become secular stars. I mean, I would classify Regina's song as in that kind of more philosophical vein. A similar song would have been Joan Osborne's What If God Was One of Us?
Right.
Or going further, John Lennon's song in which he said, God is a concept by which we measure our fear. These are songs that address the idea of what it means to believe more than they express devotion or love of God or anything like that.
Or what about Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, which as you get...
Complicated.
Yeah, it is very complicated. I mean, as you get into some of the verses that we don't hear sung on the Shrek soundtrack, for example, you know, some of that stuff is pretty far from religious, but it's done in a kind of, you know, with religious imagery.
Well, Leonard Cohen is one of our great writers on the topic of spirituality. You know, he's obviously Jewish, yet he also is Buddhist and a great secularist at the same time. So I think Hallelujah is a hymn. It is also a parody of a hymn. And I think with everything with Leonard Cohen, there's humor, you know, and there's the glass of wine that transforms into blood, and then there's the glass of wine you just drink, you know, and he's interested in both. So that's the great thing about him. Recently I read that he's kind of sick of everyone covering that song. I think he himself thinks it's gone a bit too far.
Now, you mentioned the Dylan, when Dylan got God, so to speak, back in the late 70s, that, you know, those albums took a lot of people by surprise. Has the image of those records been rehabilitated with time? I mean, as we hear a song like With God on Your Side from Dylan,
right?
Has this, in retrospect, is this good stuff?
I think so. I mean, you know, it's funny because when I was in high school, that's when that stuff was happening. And I actually saw Dylan on one of the God tours the first time I saw him. My friend, Roger Van Osten, who went to Catholic high school with me, baked a loaf of bread for Bob Dylan and brought it to him as if it were an altar offering.
Hmm.
So we were really into it. But, you know, I think so. I think those records have stood up pretty well. And the tours were good, too. I mean, he was working with gospel forms, kind of, you know, working with musicians, you know, in a framework that was great music. So even if it doesn't, you know, equal Blonde on Blonde or some of his absolute classic records, I think it's regarded as good music now.
Let's hear maybe a couple of examples of God as inspiration, Bob Dylan in the background, also Aretha Franklin, and perhaps more surprisingly, Nick Cave.
And that the land that I live in has God on its side. All the history books tell it, they tell it so well. The cavalry's charged, the Indians fell.
We've split the wood and stoked the fires. We've lit our town so there is no place for crime to hide. Our little church is painted white, and in the safety of the night, we all go quiet as a mouse, for the word is out that God is in the house.
Okay, so With God on Your Side was Bob Dylan, Precious Lord, Aretha Franklin, and God is in the House by Nick Cave. That, Ann Powers, that was a pretty jarring thing in the early part of this decade when Nick Cave, you know, who lived the rock and roll lifestyle to the hilt, suddenly got religion.
Well, did he get religion or did he just was he, again, interested in the forms of that music? I mean, Nick Cave wrote a novel called, I think it's called And the Ass Saw the Angel, that was very biblical in tone. I think he just likes the grandiosity, the hugeness of biblical language. I think that really works for him, which is similar to, I think, in some ways what Dylan got into. And, of course, Aretha, she is a Christian, and she got her start in the church. But, again, it's like using those forms, that incredible emotional expression of gospel music, and turning it into secular music, as she did on her great love songs. You know, that's what hooked us all in, right? I mean, yeah. God's a powerful force, you know, whether or not you believe in it.
Ann Powers is with me on the line. She's chief pop critic for the L.A. Times. And also joining me on the line now is Felicia Miyakawa. She's assistant professor of musicology at Middle Tennessee State University and author of the book 5% or Rap, God Hops, Music, Message, and Black Muslim Mission. Hi, Felicia.
Hello, how are you?
So this is really interesting. I mean, we've been talking about songs about God, the so-called God albums, you know, Nick Cave,
right.
Bob Dylan, Getting Religion, making records about it. You're writing about an entire movement. Tell us what God Hop is.
Sure. God Hop is, first of all, not my term. It is a term that I borrowed from the 5% Nation, also known as the Nation of Gods and Earths. This is a group that is active globally now, originally just in New York City, but they are now global. Began in the early 1960s.
As an offshoot of the Nation of Islam.
Yes. Of course, the details of that, it depends who you ask,
mm-hmm.
but yes, originally the founder of it, the 5%ers call him Father Allah, he left the Nation of Islam and began to teach in the streets. And the 5%ers, Gods and Earths, they have been involved with hip-hop since the earliest days. You know, hip-hop and the 5% Nation grew up in the same boroughs in New York City. There are oral histories of gods holding down, being used as security guards at early hip-hop parties in the South Bronx. And so there was a very clear relationship from the beginning. But the first god on the mic, the first 5%er who was very clear about his relationship to this way of thinking was Rakim Allah when he burst on the scene in 1987. So we're at 2+ decades now of 5%ers putting their theology into
their music. This is Rakim and the mystery, Who's God?
So carefully, I drop this degree, scientifically and realistically. If you can see, if you can solve the mystery, the answer revolves around your history. So carefully, I drop this degree, scientifically and realistically. An eternal blackness in the midst of the darkest night. Proteins and minerals exist within specks of light. Solids, liquids, and gases, and sparks of light within infinite lengths and widths and depths and heights. No beginning or ending. With seven dimensions, enough space for more than a million worlds and inventions to travel through time. With enough room to be the wound of the Most High's great mind, which he would soon make shine. With intelligent elements in sight that he would gather. In the realms of relativity, electricity struck matter, energy.
That is Rakim. The mystery, Who's God, is the name of this piece from a rapper who is part of the 5% Nation, an influential sect that also includes a number of other hip-hop artists. Felicia, who else would you associate with this group?
Oh, Poor Righteous Teachers, Busta Rhymes, Nas, the Wu-Tang Clan, Queen Latifah was a member for a while. The list goes on and on. Capone and Noriega. Many of these MCs were perhaps more overt in putting their doctrine into their lyrics, and some not so much. It's a very wide variety, but you can count on Rakim, for example, to always drop knowledge, to always put lessons into his lyrics, and even in the most obscure Ghostface Killa lyrics, you will still get some references, and that's actually part of what makes him so obscure, because he's using very coded language that only people within the group understand.
Isn't the letter G, isn't that part of, you know, it's become OG is original gangsta, G is gangsta, but isn't the letter G something coded in 5%ers, in the 5% nation?
Part of the 5%er lessons is something called the Supreme Alphabet, in which each letter is associated with a mystical meaning or several possible mystical meanings. It's actually a very flexible system. The meanings aren't themselves fixed, but they use the Supreme Alphabet to find out the deeper truths behind words. So the most common meaning associated with the letter G is God, which is what men are called in the nation. It's the nation of gods, men, and earths, women. But every letter has a mystical association. But you bring up an interesting point, which is that a lot of hip-hop slang actually comes from the 5% nation. For example, What Up G, which now, you know, What Up Gangsta, originally was What Up God.
And do people who throw these terms, do they have any idea, most of them, where it comes from?
Oh, no. If you're in New York City, where the gods and earths are very active, chances are fairly high that, you know, at least some people will know, or at least people who care to know the history. But no, the further you get from the source, the less often people know. I'm constantly surprised by how little my students know, or anybody's students know, when I start putting out these references. Here's what this actually means, and these light bulbs go off.
Ann Powers, is it the same God in Rakim or Wu-Tang Clan as in Dylan? I mean, I'm not from a theological standpoint, obviously, but
I'm not prepared to answer that question in a papal kind of way,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
But
from a musical standpoint.
Here's what I think. I think that artists are fascinated with systems, and oftentimes, and also artists are interested in their own position in the universe. It's part of being an artist is to create a universe, to create a place in the universe for yourself. And so oftentimes someone who is seeking a system or seeking their own place will be attracted to this. Also, as the conversation's been pointing out, it also creates community. And, you know, as artists become successful, they can feel increasingly isolated. I think I'd be curious to know if the good professor would say that sometimes for these Nation of Islam-oriented rappers, if you know, the community is something that benefits them as they become more famous, as they face the challenges of fame and success, or the opposite, the challenges of not being successful, what do they get from the on-the-ground community more than the sense of the spiritual, which I think is why oftentimes, whether it's Richard Thompson becoming a Sufi, as he did in the 70s, or Mos Def becoming a Muslim, you know, if that's a similar path.
Felicia?
That's a great, great question. I think actually their driving force is more community rather than having some sort of spiritual outlet. And, you know, most of the lyrics completely go unnoticed, even by the most hardcore fans, because they are simply coded for this community. So I think, you know, reaching out for that community connection from the beginning is their most important goal. For example, there's Brand Nubian's song Allah and Justice. Now, if you're just listening to it, it sounds like a rather odd hip-hop song, and it's only if you know a little bit about the nation itself and their traditions that you begin to realize this is actually their anthem. This is what they sing together. This has been part of their tradition. And so what is the reason to put that on an album other than to help this community adhere.
So celebrate the community.
Absolutely.
Speaking of communities, the community of Soundcheck listeners weighing in on the comments page at WNYC.org, and as we often do, we'll check in the control room with producer Joel Meyer, who's moderating the comments. Joel?
A very good conversation, John, going on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Kai from New York makes this point. Americans are particularly religious, so it would be expected that religion in American popular music would be a constant theme. Kai also weighs in with his review of Dylan's religious period with a thumbs up. Ken from New Jersey mentions Elvis Presley doing religion 2 decades before Dylan's Slow Train Coming. Elvis recorded His Hand in Mine and How Great Thou Art. Not my favorite Presley by a long shot, but certainly a surprise to his rock and roll fans in those days. David from New York shares a picture of the rapper Curtis Blow, who's now a minister. The picture is Curtis Blow behind the turntables at a hip-hop mass in Harlem. And Alex from BOC puts this down on the Soundcheck page. A perfect example of divine lyrical inspiration is Jason Spaceman Pierce of the band Spiritualized in Spaceman 3. He uses religious lyrics as thinly veiled metaphors for sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Very thinly veiled.
Well, sometimes the veil is so thick that even the artist herself has trouble seeing through it. Sinead O'Connor, who has had a long and controversial relationship with religion, most famously for tearing up a picture of the Pope on live TV here in the States, released a 2-record set called Theology in 2007. And when she joined us on Soundcheck, I asked her, and I had to ask this question several times to get anything resembling an answer, asked her if the album was in fact about her own feelings about religion and theology.
No, it's just a record, really, that happens to be called Theology, and it's got some very nice songs on it that are based around some scriptures, and really that's all there is to it.
Sing, O you righteous, to the Lord. It's right that the upright should acclaim him. Sing to Jah with your guitar. Turn up your bass amp, whack it up all the way to save him.
Sinead O'Connor with a somewhat altered version of Psalm 33 from her record called Theology. Our conversation about what happens when musicians take a turn for the spiritual continues in a moment. And then coming up later, you might know this singer-songwriter, David Bazan, from his days with the indie rock band Pedro the Lion. Faith is a big theme in his music, but as a solo artist, he's singing a different tune. He'll play live for us later on Soundcheck.
Myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts to beating. What's this feeling? My love will be holy in the ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence
this
of my
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're back talking about music and religion. We've heard about how God is portrayed by Christians, Black Muslims. We should make clear that the Black Muslims and Islam, there's a sort of a connection there that is tenuous, according to some. This is a little bit from the Jewish star Matisyahu, called King Without a Crown. We're speaking with Ann Powers from the LA Times and the author Felicia Miyakawa, and we want to hear from you as well. Do you think God is a good muse for music making? Why or why not? You can leave a comment on our website at WNYC.org. And Felicia, let me just quickly, you know, the idea of the 5%ers, 5% nation, the Nation of Islam, conventional Orthodox Islam views these as not part of Islam at all. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
And in terms of musical portrayals, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, I mean, are each of these religions portraying God and in a different way? And if so, how?
Well, I think it's important to distinguish first that the 5% nation has a very different concept of what God means.
Okay, this is still Felicia talking. Just want to make sure I'm identifying who's speaking.
Right. For them, in their lessons, they teach God is not a spook in the sky. In other words, God is not an invisible being.
The mystery God.
The mystery God, exactly. But that each black man is a God, the manifestation of the divine. So.
But how much of that do you get in the, you know, when you're listening to Rakim?
So much.
Really?
So much, yes, especially once you get... In fact, the song Mystery that you played earlier is all about the nature of who is God and how does he fit into this universe, but there's also a meditation on another one of the lessons, which is the science of supreme mathematics. He goes through all of the numbers' meanings in turn. So that might not be obvious to the casual listener, but again, it is obvious to the community while he's doing this meditation on what it means to be God and who is God.
Okay. Anne, we heard a little bit from Mattis Yahu, who, you know, while identifying for a number of years with Orthodox Judaism, was using the musical language of reggae, which, you know, that's has a long tradition of using music to deliver a religious message.
Absolutely. And, you know, Sinead O'Connor also is very interested in Rastafarianism. She briefly went through that period of declaring herself a Rastafarian. I'm not sure what her religious affiliation is now.
But I mean, even that little bit of Psalm 33 that we heard, she used the word Jah instead of God.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the thing about what Sinead does, and it's funny that she wouldn't admit, if we put it that way, that that's a religious album, because as I remember in the liner notes, she talks about it in that way. You know, she's Irish, and Ireland is a nation that was very much torn by religious conflict. And like her friends in the band U2, she has kind of struggled with these ideas of God throughout her career, and also as a woman, she struggled with the position of women in the Catholic Church, particularly. But you know, for someone like me who was raised Catholic, you talk about the nation of, I'm sorry, the Godhoppers with their stealth messages to their community. Well, for me, when I discovered U2, I had been raised Catholic, and the fact that they had a song based on a psalm, that they had songs that referred to Christianity, was very profound. And not everybody got that, but I heard it. And I think you get a lot of artists who put their messages in fairly subtly, and then their fans kind of find it and find comfort from the connections they make. Mm-hmm.
Felicia, does that sound like what you were talking about with the five percenters, with God Hop?
Absolutely, and I think with good songwriters, this tendency isn't limited to issues of religion, right? There are always going to be references to something outside of themselves, beyond themselves, to some other tradition that only a select few will get.
Right.
Let's go back to the control room. Joel Meyer has been moderating. Still more comments coming in on the Soundcheck page. Joel?
Well, Mark from Queens brings up the U2 example as well. He says, how long is it going to take before someone talks about the biggest hidden in plain sight, secularly successful Christian-themed band of all time?
30 minutes, 25?
nicely said, Mark. Clayton posts this on the site. Clayton writes, I was raised in the Baptist Pentecostal churches of Texas. While my beliefs have changed, I still value a lot of the great Christian rock that came out about in the mid-90s or so. And also a couple of people weighing in on the website wanting to correct a John Lennon lyric that we mentioned earlier. It's God is the concept by which we measure our pain.
Oh, oops, sorry.
Yeah, there's some furious commenters on the Soundcheck page.
So sorry. God is a concept by which we measure our errors, at least if you're a rock critic.
Well, you know, as a PS to all of this, some years after Bob Dylan went through his born again Christian period, he said that his religion now, he finds it in songs like this. From Hank Williams, and we'll give him the last word. We've been speaking with Anne Powers of the LA Times and Felicia Miyakawa, author and professor of musicology at Middle Tennessee State University. Anne, Felicia, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been divine.
I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
Still to come, live music from singer-songwriter David Bazan, who's had a complex relationship with this blend of music and religion. And then tomorrow on our show, Generation Y is partying like it's 1999. We'll talk to a cultural critic and to a musician about nostalgia for the recent past tomorrow on Soundcheck.
Lord, I saw the light. I saw the light. I saw the light. No more.